Do you want to talk about how you're feeling right now?
Oh, so many questions. What does this mean? What do I do?
Go on! Tell them what you think!
I liked it.
I think your calculations may have been off.
I think it's all right.
I just have a lot of feelings.
This pleases me.
These are perfectly normal feelings.
Do you even know what you sound like when you talk like that?
Now, shall we begin?
Hey everybody, this is Drew Hallam here, coming to you from the Real Feels Podcast, and I want to thank you for coming out and joining us for our very first episode, and I am here with one of my very, very good friends. His name is Nathan.
Hello, hello.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's quite handsome, too.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Look at that chiseled jawline of that beard of yours.
It's covered by a beard. But
it's covered by a beard. I know what's underneath there. It's not Chuck Norris.
What's in the beard?
What's in the beard?
What's in the beard?
Chuck Norris's beard underneath. It's only another fist.
Another fist, yeah.
All right. Okay, so enough goofiness aside, you know what? We're going to come to you every other week on Wednesdays to bring you a movie that we have chosen and watched and just kind of gotten down to the nitty gritty of what makes these movies work. And that's really what we're going to be doing here. We're going to be talking about movies.
I think there's a lot of movie podcasts out there, but none of them have Drewski and Nathan on them. So that's worth tuning in for right there.
That is golden. That is golden.
That's our tagline.
That's our tagline. No one's got Drew and Nathan. All right. So today we're going to be talking about a very, very special film, something that is very near and dear to my heart and especially my childhood. You know, being born in the 80s, but predominantly a child of the 90s. It is 1990s Tremors.
Kicking it off.
And you know what? It is Valentine's Day today, and this is kind of a stretch, but you know what? We have Kevin Bacon in Tremors, also known as Valentine McKee. So we have our very own Valentine today, Nathan.
The heartthrob that just became so much during his reign of, you know, Footloose and a lot of other things that he's also really known for. But this was it. This is his big moment, his time to shine, and boy, did he ever.
In them boots, running across the deserts.
Just two handy men.
Just two handy men wanting to get out of Perfection, Nevada. Oh, man. Okay, so we have Tremors, and it was directed by Ron Underwood. And Ron Underwood actually did a lot of films that came after Tremors that were very, very much loved. You have City Slickers in 1993, and then you also had Heart and Soul. And then moving on from then, you know, he had some good ones, like Mighty Joe Young in 1998. Mm-hmm. However, we come to a crashing halt in 2002.
Hit the brakes.
The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Left turn, right turn, I can't stop. Oh, poor guy.
Oh, man. I mean, you know what? But, I mean, I think he kind of came back from it. He eventually started doing a few more movies afterwards, but he really found a name for himself in television. He came back and he started doing a couple of episodes of like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Grey's Anatomy. But more importantly, he is predominantly with Once Upon a Time.
And television is the new black. You know, people are like, oh yeah, like I've been in this movie. That's really good. But Hollywood has found that TV, I mean, is just so powerful because you can carry on these characters for so much longer than you can for that you know, hour and a half movie.
Exactly. And like movies stay with you, but predominantly with television, I mean, obviously enough, there's more to view, but you get to stay with that character longer.
You don't binge watch three movies. You binge watch two or three seasons of a show and then finally go, okay, I got to reevaluate my life. I got to get a job. I got to do something.
You got to... Yeah, you definitely connect more with the characters, and I mean, okay, I'll have a slight bit of honesty with you right now. In preparation for this show, I did watch Tremors, the original, to get ready for this show, but then, like a day after that, I will admit, I did sit down, and I did binge watch
the rest
of the Tremors.
All five of them.
I watched the other four, because... For those of you who don't know, Tremors, it's you know what? I love it. Damn it, I love it. It's mine.
It's okay.
There are four sequels currently right now. You have Tremors 2, you have Tremors 3, you have Tremors 4, which is kind of like a prequel. It goes actually before the original Tremors from 1990. And then finally you had a straight to Netflix release of Tremors 5, and they go to Africa.
And it's interesting that they went four. You said four was the prequel?
Four was the prequel. Four, they actually go back to, like, the good old days of the West.
That's interesting, because Fast and the Furious did that kind of with Tokyo Drift, doing their third installment being a prequel, kind of, you know, bringing you back a little bit. But to go three movies deep, and because the third one... I've never watched any of the ones after this.
You're missing out. It's so good.
I love Tremors, but I don't know if I love it to marry it.
You got to marry it. You know what? They're there for you. They keep coming back.
And the third,
the more you push them away.
In the third one, spoiler alert, because I think they can fly.
Okay, so in the third one, they can definitely fly. And for those who don't know, and I, you know what, to quote Fred Ward, Mr. Earl Bastard. They're called ass blasters. Pardon my French.
What?
Ass blasters. Essentially, they bottle up all of these chemicals in their body. They shake it up, and they fart, and the fart ignites, and they just... they wow. fly into the air.
You know, well, that's for Tremors 3. If you guys want to hear Tremors 3, let us
that
know.
That's Tremors 3. If any of you have an Amazon Prime subscription, they're all on there. The fifth one, where they go to Africa, is on Netflix. And
Tremors go to Africa.
You know what? Honestly, you know what? For the beloved Samuel L. Jackson in Jurassic Park, as he says, hold on to your butts. Ooh. Coming May 1st, Michael Gross is back with Jamie Kennedy for Tremors 6.
No Reba?
No Reba. No Reba.
No Reba.
Reba's a survivor. She got off the boat, and God, she's not there. So Tremors 6, A Cold Day in Hell, is coming out for DVD and digital release on May 1st. And I'll tell you right now, that is a week before my birthday, and I am ready.
Okay, Tremors 1, which we need to get into, because
yes,
I'm excited. I am excited. I love Tremors, and I remember the first time I watched it, I was a kid, and it was on television. And so I saw a lot of the cutout,
right.
You know, simplified popcorn. Hey, it's not scary. It's all good. And then later on, my brother brought it to me and was like, Nathan, I got Tremors. I was like, we already saw
We've seen Tremors.
And he said, no, we haven't seen it.
We haven't seen the real Tremors.
Like, all right, let's watch this. And it was eye-opening because there's a lot they cut out on the TV version.
Oh, well, yeah, you got to make it even more family-friendly than they did
the
than they did at, they, in 1990.
They wouldn't even let you say shit. Like,
no.
It's a whole different ballgame.
For those of you who don't know, I mean, we have Tremors giving a rating of PG-13. And with PG-13s, you know what? You're allowed one F-bomb. And one F-bomb is what is giving it its PG-13 rating. Now, if you have a keen eye throughout the film, whenever they drop an F-bomb, it is cleverly dubbed over. It is not mother effer. It's mother humper.
Rightly so. I actually learned that tidbit from Be Cool with John Travolta. He's in the limo or in the car,
yeah.
And he drops that bit of movie knowledge on you, and then delivers the one F word in the movie. I was like, this is brilliant. This is amazing. So this Tremors slightly less brilliant with the F word delivery, but still good.
Gotcha. You know what? So for those of you who are completely lost, because I should have done this about a couple minutes ago. If you don't know what Tremors is, you have Perfection, Nevada, this small, low community with a population of 14 in the beginning of the movie. You have a population of 14 in this small, desolate little town that is just, I mean, it's barren. There's like no one there. There's nothing to do. But for some reason, you have people living in this town. And we start off with Earl Bassett and Valentine McKee, Fred Ward and Kevin Bacon, respectively.
Two handymen
who are just tired of it.
And they just do odd jobs in this town.
Right.
For, you know, for the whatever the price is, be it free beer, be it
sandwiches, something,
room and board. It doesn't matter. Whatever they have to do to get by, they wake up right there, just in their mobile office, their truck.
Their truck. Fred Ward is in the bed, and Kevin Bacon walks over and he says, "Good morning, Mr. Bassett. This is your wake up call. Please move your ass."
And then they have an argument about
who made breakfast
in the morning, the previous morning. I'm sorry, but what? My fiance don't even argue about who
Why
made breakfast.
Why is this an argument? Yeah. Who cares?
Just make some food.
And Kevin Bacon makes a point to be all proud. He's all like, "It was bologna and beans."
Oh, congratulations.
He's like, "No, it was eggs. It was bologna and beans."
How do you make bologna? You fry it?
A good fried bologna sandwich is not bad, but I mean, again, like,
that's a fried bologna sandwich.
That's fried bologna sandwich. Okay, sorry. Yeah, who's taking credit for bologna and beans? So they're pitted together with the rest of the town as an unknown force, some subterranean creature, is wrecking havoc and killing people left and right. And
what two detectives do we put on the case?
but Val and Earl.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, if this was a cop duo movie, this would have been...
Well, obviously, Earl is definitely the more experienced, like, you know,
straight cop. And
narrow. He's the bad cop. He's to the book. And you have Valentine, who's going to be, like, flirting with every dame left and right.
The young rookie that, you know, just...
wants to break the rules.
the system's messed up, man. We got to change it. Grabs the phone book, hits the guy. Yeah.
So, you have... Val and Earl going back to the town after they are trying to leave the town for good. They are going to go to Bigsby, which is 30 miles away, and they're like, "You know what? We're getting out of here. We're leaving. We're finally going to do it." And they get stuck. There's a landslide. They can't get out of the valley, and they have to go back home. And when they get back home, they realize that something had grabbed onto their truck. And they ripped it off, and it is this long, snake-like creature. And they get it off the truck, and they realize, I mean, it definitely looks like a big, you know, stretched-out, flimsy Slim Jim with teeth.
It is a very imaginative, you can tell that the idea for this monster was, like, four people bringing their drawing, and they put them all together side by side, and they said, "Oh my gosh, all of our drawings next to each other make the perfect creature. You have the ass end of this weird kind of Jabba the Hutt. You have this this middle reptilian subterranean mover. You have the jaws of a shark."
Some kind of like a big old beak.
And Starship Troopers bugs.
Right, exactly. The beaks look exactly like the Starship Trooper bug.
Tommy has this weird snake thing. They're like, "Yeah, we'll just put it, that's where
we'll stick that in the
comes
middle.
Comes out of the mouth.
Comes out of the mouth." So these giant worm-like creatures are terrorizing the town, and they soon realize that they are attracted to vibrations. And if they are walking around somewhere or running or creating a lot of noise, these creatures know exactly where they are, and they will hunt and take them down.
You can't run, you can't hide.
But it isn't until we come across Michael Gross and Reba McEntire playing Bert and God, what's his wife's name? I can't think of the wife's name off the top of my head.
We're just calling Reba.
Reba.
I don't care.
Reba played Heather. Reba played Heather Gummer. And they are these gun-toting, anti-government, kind of like
off the grid
preppers. Really, I think it's just Bert. I think Reba is there for her man.
They're the original Fallout. They're the OGs of this prepping community that we have now. People look to them as the like godfather and godmother of preppers and how to do it.
Right.
Have a rec room in the bottom of your basement with a line of guns on display. Beautiful.
And that's exactly what they do. You have Bert and Heather Gummer, who are the gun-toting fiends who definitely provide the firepower in order to combat these creatures. And so together, and with everyone who was eventually left, they try to make their way up to the old Jeep trail, which... They realize these creatures can easily move through the dirt of the valley, but they can't go through solid rock. So they know if we can get to the old Jeep Trail, we can get up into the mountains and we're completely safe and we can make our way to Bigsby and totally just survive. But it's the challenge to get to that Jeep Trail.
Oh, see, wait, were you describing Mad Max 2? No. We're not going to develop a rig that's strong enough to withstand this onslaught of attacks. No. I saw that and I was like, wait a minute, this is kind of like Mad Max 2.
That's terrible that I did not see that.
Well, and
make that connection.
It took me that rewatch to, you know, nowadays to really go, oh, wait. They have the big rig that,
right.
You know, no one can drive that. Oh, of course, Earl can. The cat will haul that.
The cat will haul everything. So, you know, they eventually do make it close to getting up to the Jeep Trail, but they are again thwarted by these creatures. And they eventually have to take out the one. There's always the one that's the smartest.
The mother, the one with the scar.
The scar on the eye. But this one, the one that actually got its tongue essentially like ripped out of its mouth.
There's
the
scar.
One, there's the one that's on the back of the truck. This is the one that is the smartest one. They dub him Stumpy.
The white whale.
The white whale. So this is the one that's too smart for them. They have to figure out a different way to get rid of him. And this is the one that eventually dies at the end of the film. Spoilers, by the way. And
yeah, if you plan on watching,
if you plan on watching,
never watch Tremors.
Why would you listen to a film review podcast on a movie you've never seen?
This is your warning.
That's
even though
strange.
We've already
been talking for a while. So I mean, we have this lovely, I mean, semi-star-studded cast. We have Kevin Bacon, obviously. We have Fred Ward, who had a really, really good career. You know, even when he started out, he started off with Clint Eastwood in Alcatraz, and he's had a fairly good career. I mean, right now he's up in his 70s, but I mean, he had a really good run for doing cinema. But like I said, we had Reba McEntire in her first role ever.
I love, so Victor Wong.
Big Trouble, Little China.
You know,
he's a good man,
and he fits so well because you know that this Asian guy just thought, oh my gosh, perfection is
perfection, Nevada,
the new Las Vegas. I'm gonna set up my general store, and I'm going to kill it. And I mean, his business ethics in this film are outstanding. He takes, I mean, we'll get to it, but what he does with the snake. Selling pictures for $15, brilliant. I loved it.
He's a good guy. And you know what? It's almost a comfort factor to see him, because I remember watching this movie back when, and I'm going to date myself a little, back when Video City was actually still in town.
Ooh.
I know, right?
Yeah,
Video City. There's a blast from the past. I remember watching Tremors after I had actually seen Three Ninjas. So after I had already seen Three Ninjas, I already have him established as this lovable, kind grandfather figure who's also a badass ninja.
Rocky, Colt, and Tum Tum.
Tum Tum. Rocky loves Emily. Rocky loves Emily.
We may have to do one of those later on.
I think so. That would actually be quite great. So you have Victor Wong owning the general store, who, in my mind, probably has, you know what? He does have a good business sense. He also takes care of his people. The first time that Fred Ward and Kevin Bacon, their characters, walk into the general store, he doesn't even question. He doesn't even say hi. He immediately goes and grabs them both two beers.
Oh, just knows his customers.
Just knows his customers. Knows walk, I mean,
taste.
Granted, there's only 14 people in the town, but
but you know,
but
them.
He's a good businessman.
Taking care of them from the moment they step in. That's hospitality.
Right. And you know what? You have your female lead. You have Finn Carter playing Rhonda LeBeck. And you know what? I've read and heard so much of a review on this film where they're thinking, like, who is she? Like, why is she here? She's not exactly pretty enough to be a strong female lead. And quite honestly, I think she's cute. I think she's a looker.
And she has that kind of that quality of She's All That with Rachel Lee Cook, that, oh yeah, she's got the ponytail and the glasses, and she has the sunscreen
on her nose.
Oh, how dorky can we make her? But I mean, she takes her pants off.
She does take her pants off, and it's not what you think, folks. It's not something that's going to be ooh risque. No, there is a scene in the film where she gets caught up in some barbed wire because she is startled by one of the graboids. That's what they're called, by the way. These giant worm-like creatures who were so delightfully named by Walter Chang, the character played by Victor Wong. He named them graboids because they come up from the ground and they grab you. So she's startled by one of the graboids coming up from the ground, and she falls over and she gets her legs caught up in this barbed wire, and she has to get out before it literally starts eating the fence post that is connected to and dragging her into its gullet.
Which, I'm pretty sure this is how porn starts. Not even talking about the two guys and the girl in the desert, which I'm like, that's a little, like, that could be really awkward really fast, that there's this gal that's just all by herself in the middle of the desert sent, and, oh yeah, I'm here doing this college thing. Oh, nice.
Oh, gosh, I'm out here studying these seismographs.
It's so hot.
Everything just makes a loud boom.
Can you protect me? So they get her pants off.
They get her pants off, but it's, you know, the fun thing about it, and again, not to get weird, the scene itself had actually not been rehearsed because the director, Mr. Ron Underwood, wanted the scene to be like, he wanted it to seem real. So the fact that she had to like do this for the first time on the first take, and that's the one they took, not rehearsing it, it seemed a bit more natural. It's much like in Alien when the chest bursting scene happens. They didn't tell any of the cast that the alien was popping out of the chest because they wanted as pure reaction as possible.
And that's good filmmaking.
It is good filmmaking.
It really is. It to kind of give that sense of, hey, you might see something you're not that's not in the script. It really gives that authentic feel to it.
Right.
Mm, real feels.
Real feels.
Ta-da!
Oh, I hear they're the realist. So, I mean, speaking of the filming, it's interesting enough because all of this is shot in 35mm, and it's all in the desert. Everywhere in the desert. There's actually only two internal scenes in the entire film, and that's in the Gummer basement, it's in his rec room, and Walter Chang's market. That's it. Everything else is filmed outside.
Which, to their credit, I mean, filming outside is not easy because you have to pay attention a lot to, which I don't know if they did the best job with, but sun placement.
Right.
But for the most part, I thought fantastic. I was in the movie not thinking, oh, that's obvious that was done at 4 p.m.
Right.
So
this doesn't look good. This looks bad. And I mean, quite honestly, when you're looking at different camera angles and especially special effects that go into films, especially monster films nowadays, because really hardly any practical effects are going into films nowadays. It's generally going to be CGI. Not to knock CGI, because CGI looks really good.
It does.
It looks great now.
Most times.
But with this movie, you have like 98% of the film is all practical effects. These are puppets. These are miniatures that are used and filmed at the right proportions to make them look huge. I mean, you actually had guys inside the giant graboid, you know, foam casing, and they're reaching out with their arms to do the tongue snake things. And they look great. They originally had the design for the graboid to be a solid piece of like almost look like a skin, and then the mouth would come out and that would open up and whatnot, but the cast and crew all kind of agreed that it looked a little
Jim
like
Henson,
little not even Jim Henson, like a dark pornographic Jim Henson. It looked a little flaccid. That's where I'm gonna say it. So they agreed that they would have the beak, the head, completely out. There's slime all in the mouths and all over the tongues, and originally there was no slime, but the coat of paint that's over the tongue biters, it almost looked like a nail glossy.
Huh.
So they added all the slime to it, and it didn't look like it had just been varnished.
They're growers, not showers.
Right. Okay. You know what? I think this is a good time to talk about what is the best and the worst lines in the entire show.
Mm, we have a segment for that.
We do have a segment for that.
Kick it in.
All right.
Oh my goodness. That's the most badass thing I've ever heard.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
You can say that again.
So, when we get down to it, I personally think that one of the best lines in the entire film is when we see beloved Family Ties actor Michael Gross playing Burt Gummer in his rec room when the Graboid breaks through the entire wall and they just start unloading all these bullets, and Reba grabs a loaded flare. Why they're loaded flare on the wall, I don't know. But she grabs all these guns, he grabs his guns, and they just start shooting the Graboid left and right. And then finally he breaks open his glass case and he gets his elephant gun and he shoots it with the elephant gun twice and it falls over dead. And he just screams out, you know, "You broke into the wrong rec room, you bastard."
Broke into the wrong goddamn rec room, didn't you, you bastard?
That is, it is so good though, and that was mine too, but I think that when Valentine is explaining his perfect woman,
okay,
expressing to his hopes and dreams of what they're gonna find, and oh gosh,
he has a list of things that the perfect woman should have.
So it's this: you will have long blonde hair, big green eyes, world class breasts, ass that won't quit, and legs that go all the way up. And just that last part, it just sold it. I died. I loved it.
You will have long blonde hair, big green eyes, world class breasts, ass that won't quit, and legs that go all the way up.
I loved it.
You know, they're good lines because they exhibit exactly what these people are loving and desperately think that they need in their lives. You have Burt Gummer, who, again, is the original prepper, and he loves his rec room. It's full of all of his guns. It's full of all of his bullets. It's his treasured place. He's got all of his food storage in there. And then also now you have Val looking for a woman. Really, he's chasing after a dream because he pulls down the visor in the truck and you see all the pictures of the woman that he once knew, who he's basing it off of.
His headboard.
Well, no, they got the trailer.
No, they do have the trailer.
So that's best line, and I think they're both hilarious. They are very fun.
A very good, I think, honorable mention is when Valentine says, "What's it doing, Rhonda?" And she responds, "Why do you keep asking me?" Which is so, so good. I wish that more scientists or the person who knows what's going on would say that. Like, quit asking me.
They are constantly asking her left and right. Like, "Well, you're the scientist. Shouldn't you know?" And she's like, "No, no one knows what these things are.
I don't want to hear the exposition of the story right now.
Right. I do not need to know where these things come from. I would rather let my mind wander." But they keep questioning her. They even say, you know, "Where does it come from? No one knows. I mean, these things are unprecedented." And then you have Nestor go, "Yeah, but where do they come from?" I think that's one thing that Perfection Valley needs. You a good dictionary.
Just a little bit of a explanation on things, but right. Poor guys.
Okay, so we have, you know, you can say that again with the best lines in the film, but we cannot walk away from the best lines without exhibiting the worst lines in the film. And I have one that it more confuses me. Like, we have Nancy, the woman who does all the pottery, and she is trying to talk about, like, "Well, Walter has that CB radio. Why can't he call out of the valley?" And Walter even says, "No, we can't call out of the valley. We have all the mountains. This is why we can't get there." And she just kind of looks defeated and she's like, "Oh, yeah, that's right. Woman, you live in perfection. How do you not know what the mountain ranges do. No one ends up in perfection on accident.
Unless they move there, like, maybe 4 days ago, and...
But she's clearly well-established. No.
Judging by her yard...
Judging by her yard and the comfortable overalls that she is in.
And knowing that her kid is just out on the street...
Pogoing. Pogoing!
For hours
We're gonna get to the pogo stick in a minute.
There's... I do like that Rhonda had the sunblock and kind of helped remind us all that, you know what, people out here, they're taking care of themselves.
Well, Rhonda's taking care of himself. No one else is taking care of themselves.
Nobody else has any sense of, you know what, I'm out in the desert. Probably should, one, dress like it, and two, actually prepare for some sun.
Right. What was a bad line for you?
I honestly think that right, when Earl tells Melvin, one of these days someone's gonna kick your ass. Like, this is a kid, a teenager.
He's a teenager. But he's an annoying teenager. If there was one person in this film that I wanted to die, it was Melvin.
And he doesn't.
And he doesn't die.
By the
spoiler alert, he comes back for the third film, and you're like, oh my god, he's back. Why?
You're still alive.
You're still alive. It's like for the Grinch, when they introduce him to the two women who raised him, they turn around, and you're like, you're still alive.
You made it out in the wilderness? Oh, Melvin.
Okay, yeah. Melvin is one of those kids, you just... He's so frustrating, and he's so annoying, and that just kind of begs the question, what are these kids doing?
They don't go to school.
They don't go to school, obviously.
Melvin has this very, like, surfer vibe, like, yo, bro, like, what's going right. on? Whoa!
And, I mean, obviously, you know, Rhonda is there for school because she's a college student coming in, so obviously it's during a school year. So either this is taking place directly over a weekend, because it's no more than, like, 2 days for the entire event to take place. But what are these kids doing? I mean, you have Nancy's daughter, played by the young girl from Jurassic Park. We have Ariana Richards playing Mindy, and Mindy is just pogoing around. She's pogoing left and right, and she's trying to break a world record. But then you have Melvin. And Melvin doesn't seem to be doing anything. Honestly, his clothes look like they're left over from his mini 80s TV spots.
Cameos
that he had.
Oh, Saved by the Bell.
Saved by the Bell.
With the world record for Pogo, I've never broken a world record, but I am almost positive that you have to have someone that monitors
it. She's just going around.
She's just
going
to send in her Fitbit of, hey, this is how many pogos I got. 20,000.
Mindy, how are you proving this? Well, my mom is here, but there was also an owl.
Shouldn't even have, like, a Skip-It or something that, like...
a Skip-It.
Do you remember that?
I do remember a Skip-It.
I always wanted
I was one. Never really in the best shape to do a Skip-It. I felt like I was always going to trip myself and fall over.
My buddy had one, and I watched from afar because I knew that I would just trip so hard. But the pogo stick, when she's going... And they try and call out to her, and good old Valentine, bum-ba-da-da, runs out and tackles her. The pogo stick
is standing straight up. Football season, like, just ended. We had the Super Bowl already happening. And Valentine, they're watching her because they're inside the store and they're trying to avoid the graboids. And they're like, where's Mindy? Oh my gosh, where's Mindy? And all you hear is the pogo. And they look outside and she's pogoing, but she has her earphones in, so she obviously can't hear them. And they're like, Mindy, get off, stop pogoing. It's under the ground. And
talking
so quiet to a girl who's clearly...
Who's making seismic activity.
Right. And so Kevin Bacon bolts. He just starts running and he tackles this little girl and saves her because the graboid is clearly seen under the ground heading towards her. But for some reason, the pogo stick is just standing straight up, defying all the laws of physics.
It landed perfect. She was a dude perfect, and it landed really straight right up on her last bounce.
And it just, on the last bounce, even with the the force of him knocking her to the ground, it should have gone down with her. But no, it was standing straight up, and suddenly it's just sucked under the ground by the graboid. And they're all like, oh God, no. And then behind them, it spits it out like, I don't want a child's toy.
Refund.
Oh, man. So I think this is also a great point to talk about a fantastic segment that we like to call Cut It Out.
What were you thinking?
Well, you got me. By all accounts, it doesn't make sense.
And you've got to cut it out.
So with Cut It Out, we talk about the scenes in movies that definitely don't make sense, that could either be taken out of the film, and it wouldn't really change anything. You would still love it. It wouldn't detract from the story. And you know what? My honorable mention, because we kind of already dove into it, my honorable mention is the pogo stick.
Yes, it definitely is something.
This is one that it doesn't make any sense. I honestly think that he should have taken the pogo stick down with him and her. And, I mean, even if it... oh my God, what if it like opened up as she was pogoing down? She went straight in.
Right into the mouth?
Right into the mouth. But then maybe she like bounced off and then she can get back out. Either way,
I think
something. Reshoot the scene or something.
There was a writer. His name was Gary, I'm sure. And he's sitting in the back corner smoking a cigarette while everyone's writing the story. And he said, what if the pogo
stays up straight?
Stands up tall. And they go, I don't know why, Gary, but I like
that's
it.
That's brilliant.
Let's put it in there and see how it does. Oh, Gary.
If I were to give one that was actually like a top choice, it's, it's when Walter Chang gets eaten up by the graboid and he's making this face of like, oh, it's got me. But he suddenly has two streams of blood coming down his nose, nowhere else on his body. And he's just dying. And it's such an awkward shot of him like, you know, looking in agony. I can totally understand he's being devoured, but like, it's the makeup job of the blood running down his nose when no one else who had been attacked by the graboids and the body is still there, or you even see them being eaten, clearly there is blood somewhere.
And
no,
action shots,
nowhere on that.
Action shots are notorious for this. When someone gets shot and there's blood coming out of their mouth, like instantly,
yeah,
that's a little bit more.
I can get with a bullet like going in the chest and suddenly, cool, lungs are filled with blood. You're going to cough up blood. Why does he get a nosebleed?
He gets essentially a snake bite. And instantly he's rotting from the inside and his organs are failing?
Right. That was a very odd scene and I didn't necessarily understand it.
I completely agree with you. That just that little moment can be
right.
I get it. You want to show the viewer that he's going down.
Walter's dying.
Along with the rest of his store that falls to the ground, like, this is happening.
The rest of the store. Poor Walter Chang.
Yes.
And so, fun fact about that is that you have Victor Wong originally cast, and it was actually meant to be, like, a Japanese name. And he said, no, we're going to make this right.
No, let's make it authentic.
Let's make it authentic. I'm going to have a Chinese name. Thank you very much. So, you know, with this...
I'm glad that his store wasn't called, like, Wong Turn or something.
Oh, that's so terrible.
It's so dumb.
People would honestly know that they made a wrong turn if they ended up in Perfection somehow.
I'm in Perfection, Wong Turn, okay.
I mean, you have people coming out there either because they're lost or there's literally the guy going, like, where did we bury the body? Was it 5 miles that way? Oh, no, it's past the old pitching post.
My least favorite scene, which I thought they could cut out completely, was poor Jim and Megan, the doctor and his wife of, you know, 40 years.
Yeah.
They're building their home.
They're building a home. All this is, it's like a skeleton. They just have the frames up.
So they're building it, and the tremor, of course, comes. Oh, what happens?
It steals the
generator?
The generator, because it's vibrating and it's
you didn't want the pogo stick, but you want the generator?
You want the generator.
Bro, that's $400. I get it. You're going to sell it or something? But, okay. So the Tremor takes the generator. He follows the cord, follows it.
Follows the cord, which is really weird because if you look at him pulling the cord, it's wet. Like, you see wet dirt on it. And I'm thinking, who's not noticing that they're pulling slimy dirt on a cord?
This isn't There Will Be Blood and you're finding oil. No, this is saliva that you're finding on this cord. So it takes him, poor Jim, he goes down, Meg gets in the car, and for some reason...
She doesn't even try to get out.
Oh, and I totally forgot about this, but Jim uses some wood...
She gets a giant 2x4 to like, because it pulls him underground, and he's like, save me, save me. They put the 2x4 on the ground and she's trying to brace him, like getting something to hold on to.
It snaps
in half like a toothpick.
You need to reevaluate what you're building your home with. If a 2x4 snaps from a man just doing pressure on it, this is your home. So she gets in the car and all of a sudden can't get out of her own vehicle because it starts leaning back.
She climbs in through the back and the Tremor starts like taking the car down. So it's like falling in at this like awkward 30 degree angle. And the radio's going.
And nothing that she does to, I don't know.
She doesn't even try to get out. She doesn't try to prevent herself from being saved. She realizes that she doesn't have the keys because they're with her husband. But again, like no one locked the door.
I've seen dogs navigate vehicles better than this gal in the back of this situation. Just completely gives up. Well, I'm going down.
Apparently, this is where I'm going. And so, I mean, the original scene...
I'm coming, Jim.
I'm coming for you, baby. The original scene for this entire shoot was that they were going to take the car. The car was going to sink as a whole piece. Just solidly into the ground, and they realized it wasn't working, and so they said, no, we're just gonna have to like do it at an angle. And so they did, you know, some propping up of the vehicle, and they had it going down that way. And so at the end of the shoot, with off in the distance, you hear her like muffled scream from within the car while, you know, a Reba McEntire song is playing, ironically enough, on the radio itself.
Reba.
And you have the twin headlights
which men
almost like someone saying like, Here, the Tremor is here.
My honorable mention is definitely the pole vaulting scene, because I thought, okay, this is a little bit too outside of the box, but I liked it enough where I said, you know what, I'll buy it. You have this idea of what if you have these three people trapped on a rock. What would you do? Well, are there other rocks near it? Yes, there is. Oh, I would take sticks and I would pole vault. Or I'd build a bridge to each rock.
Like, it is the epitome of the classic 90s film where they're completely in danger, but they want to add some laughter for the audience to, you know, kind of feel safe with them. And genuinely, this is... not only the cast, but the director, but especially the writers, giving a giant wink to the audience.
We know this is ridiculous.
Because even when they reach down and they grab these giant poles, first off, why are these giant poles even there? Why are they out in the desert near these rocks? And when he even reaches down and grabs the poles, when you look at them for the first time and then he goes down and gets them, they're not the same size poles.
No.
They clearly grew like another 3 feet.
But thank God Olympic pole vaulting was practicing by these rocks, because otherwise they're screwed.
Which is interesting enough, because they started going and pole vaulting from rock to rock, and the graboid is not going for them. It's not going for the poles, but for some reason it can predict that they're going for the truck.
And I almost thought that, okay, they would have one, like, spurt up in between and, like, try and grab them in midair, thinking
right,
that, like...
that would definitely be the moment, instead of the pogo stick, that it would grab hold and it would, like, sink down and they would be holding on to it.
Yeah.
And suddenly, like, it would chomp again and the pole would be shorter.
That would make a really good
scene.
That
would have been a much better
scene.
Dun-dun!
And they're like, reach out, grab my hand! Oh, we should rewrite it.
We should have written it. you know what? despite everything that you can, you know, find fault in it, it's such a clever movie. It's a very, very funny movie. And you know what? It might just be the nostalgia talking, but I love it. I love this film. I love the fact that Fred Ward stayed on for one more film, but more importantly, you have Michael Gross staying for every single film.
In it to win it.
He personally has become his own like horror icon because of these movies.
And would you, I mean, if you had that opportunity, you know you're not going to be Kevin Bacon. You know you're not going to go on to do all these amazing, fantastic films, but do you ever just agree to be that guy in the movie? To be, you know, this
you have a notable icon, you have a notable character.
Show up to maybe a Comic-Con once in a while and throw up everyone's face, right? Like, what?
People will be happy to see Kevin Bacon at a Comic-Con and go like, oh my god, Tremors, or oh my god, you were Hollow Man.
I don't think you're looking at Kevin Bacon going,
everything's better with Bacon except this.
I thought you were Tremors. You were amazing.
They're gonna go for Michael Gross because he's Burt Gummer. He is the relatable character that everyone can know and sit there and go, I know a tongue-goading nut job.
Or they read from the Prepper's Bible that I'm sure has quotes from him of this movie in it.
Right. I mean, you know what? Yeah, I think he's done a great job. I think it's a fantastic thing that he stayed with the films. And genuinely, it made me love it even more.
Did you think that the last kill, though, this is one thing that it did kind of bother me. Was that a little uninspired?
I think it was definitely uninspired, and it also didn't even make sense sometimes, despite the fact that it is, and again, I can talk crap about things that I find in the film, but I, again, love this movie.
I love it too.
But when he is at the last bit and they have the final bomb that they've been using to blow up all of these graboids left and right, but of course Stumpy, the smartest one, decided to spit out the one of the final bombs, and it lands perfectly, of course perfectly, in Burt Gummer's, you know, explosion pack. And of course it blows up all the rest of the bombs. They only have one left. And he's like, I got a plan. And this resort, or this kind of references back to the beginning of the film when Kevin Bacon wakes up Fred Ward's character and he's yelling, Stampede! And Earl Bassett apparently had been in a stampede sometime in the past, and he freaks out.
That's so traumatic.
And so we have Valentine running like hell towards the edge of a cliff that will go down into like a basin. And he's lighting the bomb and he throws it, and you know, Earl's like, you threw it too far, and it explodes, but it explodes right behind the graboid. And I guess it like scares it and makes it go faster. And for some reason, the graboid goes out of the side of the cliff and then falls to its death. I would definitely say that there are problems with it, because there's a scene in the film when Kevin Bacon is running and Rhonda even yells at him and says, stop!
Don't move!
Don't move! And he stops.
The T-Rex can only see you if you're moving. Like, oh, we get it.
And he stops, and like the graboid can't find him at that point. But for some reason, at this end of the movie, Stumpy, who's supposed to be the smartest graboid around, summa cum laude graboids.
Can we just have a Monster University, you know, Monster Inc., where it's just graboids and they're trying to go to school, and Stumpy? Oh no, because this would—he wouldn't be Stumpy then.
He wouldn't be Stumpy. He would definitely have had, you know, the one arm, the tongue that was before it was ripped off. But I mean, he stops at the edge of the cliff and he waits, and the graboid is still coming towards him. What is he moving towards?
And would he not go up to the last known location?
Right, where the vibrations stopped.
Oh, and it just takes out Kevin Bacon with... Now, that part, if it just, like, went at an angle, took out Kevin Bacon, he sacrifices himself for the group, that, I'd be like, wow. It would also explain why he's not there in the rest, but...
That would kind of be the reason why he would not be in there in the rest.
A whole different tone. It's Rhonda's sad. No, I get why they didn't do that. But just to have it exit stage left and find itself at the bottom of the ravine as it splats, but reminded me a little bit of The Last Crusade with the miniature. I was like, oh, there we go.
But then we wouldn't have such lovable lines of when the Graboid is exiting the side of the cliff and falling to the rocks below, and Kevin Bacon looks over and says, "Can you fly, you mother humper?"
Spoiler alert. They can.
They can, but not very far. You have to wait till the third movie for it to happen. Oh, man. Okay, so what's interesting enough is that this movie kind of relates to other movies at the time, or at least ones that inspired it. And you have things like Jaws. Definitely beneath the surface. You don't know where it is.
Even the camera angle.
And the camera angles work very well because they mimic the creature itself. Like, it's looking one way. The camera turns up like the creature suddenly, like, turned its head to look. It follows the sight line, despite the fact that these creatures don't have eyes.
You can feel that they are feeling the vibrations and that they're going towards...
Would you say they're feeling good vibrations?
Oh, why was that not in here?
Terrible.
But you can tell that the camera work really motions to their strength of, hey, we want you to feel what these tremors, you know, feel, Graboids. And I appreciated it. Liked it.
Right. They, I mean, taking the idea of, like, Jaws, you know, something is beneath the surface and you don't know where it is and you're afraid to move in case it's always going to be there. You know, funny enough, like, one of the original titles for Tremors was Land Sharks.
Ooh.
Which I don't think gives it that same type of quality. It's almost like, I mean, more importantly, hearing it now, it's like thinking Sharknado.
That is true. Would you have said...
It's almost a little, like, on the nose.
Too much? Yeah.
Too much. It's too much. I like the idea of Tremors because, I mean, with a tremor, you only get a little bit. You don't know what the full damage is.
That is very true.
So I think it kind of works for everything that actually went into it. You know what? I mean, it's good. The title is good.
I agree. I would recommend this to be at least a one-time watch, if not a second.
Oh, hands down. I mean, personally, you know what? I saw this when I was younger. Not too young, obviously, because there is a handful of language, you know, that came into it. You have some violence, but really nothing overly bloody. You saw, like, fake brain matter or, like, muscle tissue that was eaten up by the creatures, but it's not terribly violent.
The ripped up sheep, I would say.
The ripped up sheep is a little, you know, one of those things. But I mean, this is definitely something that I'm going to recommend to my friends. I currently do all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know what? How about when the kids get older? Would you
let your kids sit
down and watch it? Excellent. You know, despite the fact that the movie had only a budget of like $11 million, it didn't do that well in the theaters. In the U.S., it only came out to about $16 million. But thank God for cult followings, because a cumulative gross is $45 million to this date.
Okay.
So I mean, it's definitely made back its money in VHS and DVD sales, and even better for the fact that Tremors 6, A Cold Day in Hell, is coming out in May. You have Kevin Bacon in a recent interview that he admitted that a new Tremors remake, or like a revamp, is coming, and he's going to be in it. And this is the only character that he has ever said that he would want to return to.
No way. Wait, yeah. He's in this next one.
He's not in Tremors 6, A Cold Day in Hell. Okay. But there is, in production right now, like a revamp of the original Tremors.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm really, really excited for that.
Now, I love his reaction to his pregnant wife when he first...
Oh, this was when he was, like, originally filming... they hadn't even begun filming yet.
And you can imagine a young Kevin Bacon
thinking that he is the cat's meow.
And you know, he is. Look at him. He's gorgeous.
He's Kevin Bacon. He has a 6-degree separation from everybody. And, you know, he can dance. He's got that chiseled bone line. But he was having, like, a self-crisis.
An absolute meltdown to his pregnant wife.
In the middle of the street while they're taking a walk. As he, like, you know, shouts, like, in Streetcar Named as a Stella. He shouts to the crowd. What does he yell?
I'm in a movie about underground worms. And you know that she just was like, shut the hell up. I'm about to give birth, like, to our child.
I have a baby.
My body is ruined right now. Like, and you're worried that your beautiful face is going to be on thousands of theaters nationwide? Yeah, really rough.
And you know what? I don't think he regrets it now. I definitely think that he sees the benefit of being in this film with his entire cast. And it's good. It's a good movie. I definitely give it, you know, like a solid 4 out of 5. I'm not going to give it a 5. It's not a perfect film.
It isn't.
It's not a perfect film. And again, it might be the nostalgia factor creeping in and making me just see stars with it. But, you know, by Gummer.
By Burt Gummer.
In Gummer we trust. I love this movie. I think it's a great film. And it's a definite watch.
I'm not going to give it a full 4. I'm going to give it a 3.5.
That's fair.
Because it's above average. It's above, just, you know, meh. And, yeah, I give it a 3.5.
3.5. I think that's good. Excellent. So, you know what? This has been us for the Real Phyllis podcast so far. And we thank you for joining us.
We got a lot more coming.
We really do. You know what? You can find us on all the usual. Find us on Podbean, Google Play, SoundCloud, and definitely iTunes. And if you take a look for us on Facebook, you can look up Real Phyllis Podcast. That's R-E-E-L. Feels Podcast. You can also check for us on Twitter at Real Feels Pod. And Nathan, I know you don't do the Twitter.
I don't. Not yet. Not yet.
You really should. You should get on there. Meet some of these fabulous people.
Meet some of our fans. I want to see just how many of you are dying to meet me. So hit us up and let's make this happen. Let's do this.
You know what? Hey, you know what? No. You're going to find us right here every other Wednesday, same bat time, same bat channel, and we're going to be getting into movies that we're going to just
feel.
We're going to feel about it. So, you know what? Thank you for joining us.
I'm Nathan.
I'm Drew.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Hey, you're the realest, Nathan.
Aww.
Hey guys, before we completely go, I have a special promo for you guys to listen to from my good friend Thomas, who you may know from the Never Ending Minute podcast. But this time, he's got a little something extra special for you.
Do you love the X-Men movies? What about the comics? Did you sit on the living room floor wrapped in a blanket eating cereal when the X-Men cartoons were on? Now's your chance to join my co-hosts and I as we dissect the movies chapter by chapter. We'll talk comics, cartoons, and video games. If it's even tangentially related to the X-Men, we'll be talking about it. So come join us and our outstanding guests as we traverse the many X-Men universes. Find us at xminutespodcast.com or a podcatcher of your choice by searching for X Minutes Podcast. Excelsior!